Good morning. It's great to be a part of this morning with you. I deeply, deeply missed last week. We were in Louisville visiting with family, and it felt so weird not being here. And my wife was saying she was visiting with some family and just felt out of place. We missed you guys so much. So it's good to be here this morning. And continue praying for us. I'm on pins and needles as the baby nears. But I did get the baby bed ready, so at least it'll have a place to sleep in time. But it's really great to be here this morning with you. And we've been talking about this idea of the kingdoms and chaos. And, you know, in our world, we see this on a day-to-day basis, don't we? We see kingdoms and nations rise. And we see kingdoms and nations fall. We see kingdoms make beautiful choices that bring the flourishing and benefit of their families and their communities and their nation. But more often, we see choices that only bring more turmoil and chaos and struggle. And in the midst of all of this, in the midst of all of this strife, in the midst of these risings and fallings, we have to ask, where is God in the middle of all that? Because oftentimes when we think about God and who God is and what God does, we think about them in the terms of the church. And well, God, we know that we encounter God on Sundays when we come together. We know that we're supposed to live Christian, you know, pure, devoted Christian lives as individuals and as church. But where's God in the greater happenings in our world? And I'll submit to you this morning that nothing happens. No kingdom rises and no kingdom falls without God knowing it. Because when we look around our world, God is not just sovereign over the church. Okay? Though most certainly He is. He is sovereign over all creation. And that word sovereign, that's a real churchy word. But really what that means is God has all authority and power. And I wonder how often we forget that. When we listen to the happenings of day in and day out, you get on Google and you look up the news and you just see one chaos after another. And you turn on the TV and it's just a constant stream, an influx of just dismal and chaos and destruction and war. And I think we kind of get sucked into that. And it's real easy for us to because it feeds into our nature. You know, there was a Chinese company who tried to start a news organization that only ran positive news. They failed miserably. No one watched it. Because there's something about that negativity that just sucks us in and draws us into that. And we have to ask, where is God in the midst of all of this nation turning? Well, the Bible shows us that God's right in the middle of it all. And He's accomplishing His purposes in the world, despite what the nations do. If you'll turn with me to a few passages, we're going to actually flip quite a few in the Psalms. But let's look at Psalm 1 and 2. And it's really significant that the Psalms begin this way, because Psalm 1 begins with blessings on the one who follows God's way. He'll be like a tree. He or she will be like a tree planted firmly by the waters. They will provide fruit. They will be strong. But the wicked will not stand before the judgment of God. Well, then we get to Psalm 2. And so Psalm 1 really emphasizes for the people of the Old Testament, in the Old Testament period, covenant faithfulness, right? Faithfulness to God's call to them as a people. Same as us today. But then Psalm 2, why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed, meaning His king, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens laughs. There's not many places in the Bible where we see God laughing, but this is one of them. It's like God looks and He sees all of these kingdoms and their own self-importance and their own pomp and circumstance. And He laughs because of their own perceived importance. The Lord holds them in derision. Then He will speak to them in His wrath and terrify them in His fury, saying, As for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will tell of the decree. The Lord said to me, you are my son, today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage, and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. We know that, and this time they were probably thinking of David and the Davidic line as the king through which this happens. But as we go on and we look in the New Testament, this is also talking about Jesus and his eternal kingdom. But I want to look at a couple other places. I want to look at Psalm 47. Clap your hands. This is Psalm 47, verse 1. Clap your hands, all people. Shout to God with loud songs of joy. For the Lord, the Most High, is to be feared, a great King over all the earth. He subdued peoples under us and nations under our feet. He chose our heritage for us, the pride of Jacob, whom he loves. God has gone up with a shout, the Lord with the sound of a trumpet. Sing praises to God. Sing praises. Sing praises to our King. Sing praises. For God is the King of all the earth. Sing praises with a song. God reigns over the nations. God sits on his holy throne. The princes of the peoples gather as the people of the God of Abraham. For the shields of the earth belong to God. He is highly exalted. Let's look at Psalm 96. But sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Sing to the Lord, bless his name. Tell of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. For great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the peoples are worthless idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Ascribe to the glory. To the Lord, glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. Worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. Say among the nations, the Lord reigns. Yes, the world is established. It shall never be moved. He will judge the peoples with equity. Let's look at Psalm 99. The Lord reigns. Let the peoples tremble. He sits enthroned upon the cherubim. Let the earth quake. The Lord is great in Zion. He is exalted over all the peoples. Let them praise your great and awesome name. Holy is he. The king in his might loves justice. You have established equity. There's many more that we could read, but I think you're starting to get the point. Where is God among the nations? He's reigning over them all. And I wonder if that reality is really the truth that we take seriously sometimes, because in the midst of all the chaos, it just seems that that's the first thing that goes. Well, God's got this, right? God's in control. He's going to turn this all to something good. I mean, is that our response when we see this constant stream on the news? I mean, I'll be honest, that's not always my response. I mean, I recall this past year, earlier this year, some of these shootings and things that happened. I was just listening to this constantly, 24/7, and it just overwhelmed me. And there was a time I just had to pull over off the road and just weep, because my heart was broken for the world. Because it's like, where is the leadership? Where is the righteousness? Where is justice? Because when I look among the nations, I don't see it. All I see is self-importance and self-regard and service to self. And it breaks my heart, because when I look at this, God desired for the nations to be a partner with him to accomplish his purposes. You know, when he was establishing Abraham and his family lineage to be the head of Israel, this new nation, his call to him was that his family, that this nation, would be a blessing to the world. That was their call. That as a nation, they would be a blessing to the world. And when we look in Israel's history, and last week, you know, I'm pretty sure Christopher talked about David. We see that David was a man who had a sincere desire to do this, but had some personal struggles that was hard for him to get through. But he had a son, and the son's name was Solomon. And Solomon was tasked with this really, really important role. He was tasked with building the temple. See, all these Psalms, when it talks about, like especially Psalm 2, and all this, it talks about that God's kingdom, God's justice, that God's rule, at least in the Old Testament period, was going to come through Jerusalem, and specifically through the temple. The temple was significant in the people's life because the temple was a representation of God's presence among them. It was a place where the priests and others went to pray to Him, and the priests would go and make sacrifice to Him in the most holy and sacred place. One day a year on the Day of Atonement on behalf of all the nation. It was a place where heaven and earth collided. So it was significant that God called among all the nations for the temple in Israel to be the place by which His justice and His rules and decrees came out. Because this was the place where God met man. And so Solomon was tasked with building this. Let's look at 1 Kings chapter 9. And we'll see when Solomon finished this. So we see that the nations were meant to be a partner with God in accomplishing His purposes, and specifically Israel, as His covenant people, as His privileged people, were to be this. And Solomon, as a king over this, what was his call? As soon as Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house and all that Solomon desired to build, the Lord appeared to Solomon a second time as He had appeared to him at Gibeon. Verse 3. And the Lord said to him, I have heard your prayer and your plea, which you have made before me. I have consecrated this house that you have built by putting my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will be there for all time. And as for you, if you will walk before me as David your father walked, with integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I have commanded you, and keeping my statutes and my rules, then I will establish a royal throne over Israel forever, as I promised David your father, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. But if you turn aside from following me, you or your children, and do not keep my commandments and my statutes that I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land that I have given them. And the house that I have consecrated for my name, I will cast out of my sight. And Israel will become a proverb and a byword among the peoples. And this house will become a heap of ruins. This house, this sacred place, will be nothing more than ruins to me. It's not about the structure, right? It's not about the boundaries. It's about the heart. And God, then as now, calls us as people to have a heart for His justice, to have a heart for His promise, to have a heart for His call. See, He loves all the nations, and He wants to bless all the nations. But He also calls us to love Him, to listen to Him, to seek justice for the oppressed, to seek justice for the overlooked and the downcast. And so, how does Solomon respond? Well, it seems, at least Solomon, you know, what do we know Solomon for? His wisdom, right? Surely the most wise man who ever lived on earth would take heed to God's call and say, yeah, I'll do this. Unfortunately, that's not what we see. Solomon begins to acquire for himself. And if you look here in chapter 10 of 1 Kings, he started to acquire for himself riches. Verse 14, now the weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents of gold. We are afraid of that number, right? None of us like to get our ticket at the restaurant and it's $6.66. We say,
charge me another penny, please. You know, I don't want that as my, I've seen people do that. But it was just a symbol in the ancient Jewish time. It was a number that symbolized something that was decayed, right? Something that was not going according to God's will. And so here's a first hint. Also the fact that in chapter 9, Solomon, the king of Israel, used slaves to build these structures. It's amazing because Israel was a community who was bearing the identity and the marks. Every year they celebrated Passover as a remembrance of the time that they were slaves. And now, the slaves have turned to enslave others. There's another sign that something's not going the way God called him to go. Then, if you look down in verse 26, and Solomon gathered together chariots and horsemen. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen, whom he stationed in the chariot cities and with the king in Jerusalem. And the king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stone, and he made cedar as plentiful as the sycamore of the Shephelah. And Solomon's import of horses was from Egypt and Kew, and the king's traders received them from Kew at a price. So let's take this image further. Not only is he enacting what Pharaoh did to his own people by enslaving others, but he's actually going back to that land to acquire chariots and horses. Now that may not mean a lot to us today, but if this were written in 21st century America, this would be, he went back to the country that had formerly enslaved him to buy weapons of mass destruction, right? And tanks and things of that nature to acquire a lot of this for himself. Well, as a king, I mean, this makes sense, right? As a small nation, lots of big countries around him, this, of course, he'd want to protect his boundaries. I mean, we even exalt that as a good thing. But as we see, this continues into chapter 11. And these series of actions lead to now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh. Taking the very king, the position that had enslaved his people as his wife. And they turned his heart away. They turned his heart to false gods. And I don't know if you noticed, but this is a perennial issue throughout the Bible. Idolatry. And it's something we think of in the Old Testament, maybe not so much in the New Testament, but it's everywhere. It's in both. The draw to acquire, the draw to possess, the draw to worship something lower than God is strong. We see that happening here, and Solomon turns away. He turns away from God. And so all of these things, I said these are symbols of his downfall. Well, obvious they turn into idolatry, but I want to look at a passage in Deuteronomy chapter 17. And hundreds of years prior to this event, this was written. Or these events, rather. Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 14. When you come to the land that the Lord your God has given you, and you possess it and dwell in it, and then say, I will set a king over me, like all the nations that are around me, you may indeed set a king over you, whom the Lord your God will choose. One from among your brothers you shall set as king over you. You may not put a foreigner over you who is not your brother, only he must not acquire many horses for himself, or cause the people to return to Egypt in order to acquire many horses. Since the Lord has said to you, you shall never return that way again. And he shall not acquire many wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he acquire for himself excessive silver and gold. I mean, you have thought this was written specifically for Solomon, because everything that it says here not to do, that's exactly what he wandered into doing. the law said, don't go back to Egypt. What am I going to do? I'm going to go back to Egypt. Don't acquire many chariots and horses. What am I going to do? I'm going to acquire many chariots and horses. Don't take foreign wives because they'll turn your heart to idolatry. What am I going to do? You know, everything it said not to do, that's what Solomon did. And as a result, his kingdom began to decay. This nation through which God's decrees was supposed to come through, this temple through which was supposed to be a representation of God's abiding presence with them forever, is now on a destructive path. And we'll talk more about this very evocative and difficult thing called exile next week. But I want to say, what does all this mean for us? What does all this mean for us? Well, let's take it down to a more to a level closer to us. What does this mean for us as the church? Because in the New Testament, we are called as like a new Israel. And the temple is no longer a sacred space that we go make a pilgrimage to certain times of the year or when we need prayer. What is the temple now? The church. And it's through the church and it's through the temple that God's decrees and that God's way is supposed to be lived out. It's through the church that we are supposed to be that blessing to the nations as Israel and Abraham, as Paul tells us we are his heirs, were supposed to be. And in Bible class, I read sort of these five things that are challenges for 2018 for churches. And I have to say, when we look around us and we see these things, what is our response as a church? Oftentimes, the church as a whole is fear. Will we become more marginalized? Will we have less of a voice? Will we have dwindling numbers? Will there be less people who believe? You know, it's always these questions, these series of questions about it's crisis mode and everybody's writing books and blog posts and all these things to try to address these issues. And all I keep hearing is crisis. Like, this crisis is pending and we're going to lose everything if we don't do something now. And the truth of the matter is as the church, we are the temple of Christ. We are the temple of God. Through us should come the blessing to the nations. Through us should come the calling of God. Through us should come the mission in this world and in our community. Let us not shrink back in fear, or not. Let us not, even more probably insidious, that's less apparent, is compromise. We compromise to the idols of our culture. Because in the name of relevance, or progress. Leaving truth is never progress. Leaving the call of God is never progress. Let us not shirk back from our responsibility to be a light. Let us rise up, stand boldly for what Christ has called us to be, and that's a light and compassionate body of people who represent Him, who enact what His kingdom is all about. Peace, and mercy, and love. Let us not be prone to these idols that are all around us every day that are striving and grabbing for our souls. That's our call. That's what this message means for us. Yes, we're talking about nations, but we are the inheritors of the nation of Israel as the church from the Hebrew Bible. And we have the same call to be a blessing. Let us not miss that call. Let us realize that that impacts every one of our steps as we go about this week. If any of you have not come to Christ, been a part of this unstoppable movement called the church, through which He works His love and His compassion and His peace, you've never been immersed into Him and you've never confessed Him as Savior, and you want to take that journey and step today, and Christ calls you as we stand, as we sing. And if you have, and you can stand. And if you have, and you just say, you know what? I need a change of heart. I need to make a decision to take a different path today. And Christ calls you as well.